So, once there was a couple who had just moved into their new home, their dream home, and they were having their first morning breakfast there. And the wife looked out the window and she saw one of the neighbors hanging up her clothes. But she was shocked to realize the clothes the neighbor was hanging up, were dirty. They were dirty. So she said to her husband, "Well, I cannot believe that woman does not know how to do laundry. I'm going to go over anonymously and put my best laundry detergent on her front porch, along with a list of directions." So the husband kind of rolled his eyes, but he didn't say anything. So the next week, next Saturday, they sat down once again to have breakfast, and she looked out the window and she said, "There's a neighbor hanging up clothes, and they're sparkling clean. My anonymous gift worked." And he very quietly said to her, "Well, honey, I hate to tell you this, but this morning I got up and washed the window." So, yes, the power of a positive perspective is absolutely part of abundance. It's very related to what we're talking about today. So, we are continuing today on our series based on the book, The Art of Abundance, by Dr. Dennis Merritt Jones. And Dennis Jones says, people all want essentially the same thing: freedom, inner peace, and a life filled with purpose and meaning. What they need to do is to open their eyes, we might say, clean their windows of consciousness, right, to the limitless abundance just beyond what they see. And in order to do that, as most of you know who've been with us or have been taking the discussion or doing the discussion group, he outlines 10 rules for a prosperous life. And because we're well past the half point of the book, we're going to do a little review for anybody who's missed any of them or all of them. So here goes our review. First of all, it's important that we understand our oneness with the universe, because that is a secret to life. Oneness is one of our First Unity core values. We are one in perfect divine energy all the time. Secondly, we exist in an expanding universe. The principle of abundance is an attribute of that expansion. So we always have access to the principle of abundance. Thirdly, we are energy conduits directing the impartial flow of energy by what we hold in mind, our thoughts and beliefs. We call that the suitcase of our consciousness for that lesson. Next, this results in life filled with an abundance of either not enough or more than enough. What's in our consciousness determines that. And last but not least, last week we looked at the principle that says we stay in the flow by joyfully receiving, using, and giving. That's the process for the way that we stay in the flow. So today we're going to look at rule 6 and 7. Rule 6 is be passionate. And Jones begins the chapter with a quote by Wayne Dyer. "Strong emotions, such as passion and bliss, are indications that you're connected to spirit or inspired." Actually, inspired and desired come from the same root, and it means from God. So when you're inspired, the abundance you seek comes streaming into your life. And Jones says, when we are happy doing what we love and loving what we do, we are inspired. We are receptive to that inflow of spirit. Now, passion ascends naturally from within us and opens a door of abundance and joy when we are living in our passion. Now, we usually think of passion simply as a compelling emotion or feeling, an inspiring surge of energy, we might say. However, when you really think about it, passion can have a dark side also. And Jones says the deciding factor is whether the passion comes from love or whether it comes from fear in one of its many disguises. Driven by fear, passion can be destructive. Driven by love, it's an essential component of a life well lived. Jones says when we practice emotional self-awareness, it can help us identify and harness our energy, using it in intentional and productive ways by doing what we love. That's really important. So if you think about it and notice, when you are doing something you love, you are in the flow, and there's no need to force, push, manipulate, or coerce anyone or anything to achieve your abundance. It just flows naturally when you are lovingly doing what is yours to do. And that was used in our daily word, and I think in your prayer today, Betty. So what does it mean? We say that a lot in Unity. What does it mean to do what's yours to do? Well, Joan says we can discover what is ours to do when we align our passion, that tug within, to our unique gifts and talents. It's the merge of those things. He says, and I quote, "Finding passion at the center and the circumference of your life gives you a limitless power surge that carries you over obstacles into the flow, feeling your oneness with the universe and with the principle of abundance." So he invites us to, Joan's big on questions, and I love that because I think questions drive thinking. I really think answers sometimes can shut it down. So he's big on posing questions. And these are two questions that he poses for us. One, are you currently doing what you love and loving what you do? And secondly, are you willing to let go of that which is not yours to do and may never have been in order to embrace that which is yours to do? And this does not mean throwing caution to the wind. I'm not advising anybody to go tomorrow morning and quit your job at 8:01 in the morning, nor am I advising you to take all your money out of the bank and invest it in skydiving lessons. Nothing like that, okay? But here's the important factor. He asks, what's your plan? What's your plan to live your passion? Passion and purpose must be mindfully, intentionally practiced and balanced with a plan. He quotes Benjamin Franklin, who said, "If passion drives you, let reason hold the reins." And Joan says that eventually, as we're moving toward our passion, we will come to a fork in the road. And that fork in the road is something we must navigate. And in order to navigate it successfully, we have to do so with both head and heart. So here are the three paths. One, sometimes we are driven by what we should do. That means we're driven by reason and logic. Nothing wrong with that. Reason and logic are good things, right? But sometimes we are so committed, so involved in our duty, what we think we should do, that we not only should on ourselves, but we allow other people to should on us. And that just makes us resentful. And we know, we talked last week about resentful stops the flow. Resentment stops the flow. So that by itself is not always a great idea. Also, we can move strictly from what we're inspired to do. That means purely from the heart. That means we're divinely guided. And that means that we are going to have joy. So that sounds like a great thing. However, doors are closed, honesty time. Have any of you had this passion and been so excited about something but not really had a plan, and therefore you get sidetracked along the way? Anybody have those graveyards of unfinished projects at home? Some of us do that. It can happen. So what he really advises is what he calls can do, but I think we could think of a better name for it in a way, because it's a combination of both reason and passion balanced. And those mathematicians in the room are going to love this. He says that when we combine reason plus passion times commitment, which is part of that plan, it yields success and it brings us joy. So another important question to ask ourselves, I don't have a slide for this, but another important question is, whose dream am I pursuing? I'm going to say that again because it's really important. Whose dream am I pursuing? This reminds me of a student I had when I taught at Maryville University. It was a class in writing workshop for prospective teachers. And the first time I sat down with this young man, his name was Joshua, to have a writing conference with him, I'm telling you what, his piece of writing took my breath away. I've never had a student with that kind of writing skill. It was just amazing. And when I went through the process of telling him what strengths I saw in his piece of writing, which was the way the process worked, he looked at me, he had tears in his eyes, and he said, "I need to see you after class." And I said, okay. So we met after class. That meeting and several other meetings during the semester, he shared with me that both of his parents and three of his grandparents were teachers. And he had been programmed from a very early age that he would be a teacher. In fact, his parents refused to pay his tuition unless he majored in education. I know. The problem was he did not have any desire at all to teach. I'd watched him actually in a classroom. He was just dead as a doornail. He was just wooden. He did not want to teach. He had one passion and one really strong talent, and that was writing. So eventually, he created a plan. He decided to work two jobs during the summer. He got student loans. He chose a school out of state that would meet his major, that he could major in creative writing, and he paid for his own college for a while. And eventually, believe it or not, his parents, when they saw how passionate and dedicated he was, they did come on board. That's just one story of many, people who get derailed because they follow someone else's passion, not their own. So, this is a quote I've always loved from Howard Thurman, who's a theologian. He said, "Don't ask what the world needs, ask what makes you come alive and go do it. Because what the world needs is people who come alive." Have you heard that quote before? I love that quote. There was a little piece last night on the national news. It was a foundation that started working with students of low-income students in the city. Did anybody see it? And they were actually teaching them to play polo. And part of the polo training was to take care of the horse they were assigned. And they interviewed a little girl who had just graduated from, she was in college. No way in this world she would have ever gotten to go to college, but she got a polo scholarship, believe it or not. And her words, wrote them down, I want to read to you. She was shown brushing one of the horses and caring for one of the horses, and she said, "This is where I want to be. This is my passion. This is my home." That's a testimony of living from your passion. And in her case, she had some help to do that. So Jones says, once you realize that you're free to follow your passion, you will be guided to the greatest good, your greatest good, because you will be doing what feeds your mind, heart, and soul. And in the process, your life will open to joyous possibilities. And we know that abundance always follows a joyful heart. So that brings us to the seventh rule. I think they're really related here. The seventh rule is be blessed. Jones says we must use the power of positive perspective. Think of the beginning story. The window was clouded and so forth. The perspective was not clear. So here's a question. Is this glass half full or half empty? What do you think? Come on, you only have two choices. Let's hear your answer. Everybody says full. You're unity people. You say full. I love that. Well, actually, it was a trick question. You're right. The glass is full, but it's all full, not half full. It's full with half full with water and half full with air, right? And both are blessings. Both are blessings. Mandy Hale said, "Be grateful for the small things, the big things, and everything in between. Count your blessings, not your problems." Now, Jones makes a distinction between to bless and to be blessed. And we'll just do this quickly. He says to bless is to consecrate, dedicate, glorify, honor, magnify, and I'm going to add what Eric Butterworth says, Unity legend Eric Butterworth. He says to bless is to confer good upon. So that's what to bless means, when you say I bless you to somebody. But to be blessed is to receive, be grateful, show appreciation, to know and accept one's good fortune, okay? And the point is, to bless others is to confirm wholeness exists in every single area of their lives, every single area. That's what affirmative prayer is all about. That's how the chaplains pray, by seeing the person completely whole. And we know that when we see through those clear, clean windows of abundance consciousness, we know that nothing is missing. Every person has all they need. In oneness with Spirit, we're born blessed. But our blessings lie dormant within us unless we recognize and activate them through the power of positive perspective. Jones quotes Wallace D. Wattles, who is the author, you probably can't really read this, too small, it's the only quote I could find here, but he's the author of a book called The Science of Getting Rich, and here's what he says. The more gratefully we fix our minds on the Supreme God, when good things happen to us, the more good things we will receive. And the reason simply is that the mental attitude of gratitude draws the mind into closer touch with the source from which all blessings flow. So here's the question. Do you see yourself as blessed? Mirror on the wall. Do you see yourself as blessed by all? Jones says we miss a myriad of blessings every single time that we look past what those things that we take for granted. Every single one of us right here, right now, no matter what is going on in our outer lives, we are blessed with the ultimate gift of life, a gift that is precious beyond any monetary value. And yet, how often do we stop and consider this blessing? It's really important because the more energy we focus on any one thing, the more the life force flows into it, expanding the experience. Jones says when we bless ourselves or anyone else, we're using positive perspective to direct the very energy of the universe. And there's nothing magical about this, no hocus pocus. You don't have to be a minister, a rabbi, or a saint in order to bless somebody or pray with somebody. All you have to do is to be conscious, present, and aware of the omnipresence of sacred goodness and oneness. And next, Jones says something with which I really agree. Are you ready? He says, before you can effectively bless anyone or anything, you must be able to see and accept how blessed you are. I really do agree with that. As the ancients would say, you can't give away what you don't have. So Jones advises us to pay close attention to this seventh rule of abundance, because when we master the power of positive perspective, seeing ourselves as blessed, we have mastered the secret to the life of abundance, he says. Now here's the bottom line. The power of perspective works both ways. We always have a choice. We can focus on what's wrong with our lives, or we can focus on what is right with our lives. Jones says when we are consumed by the drama of what is wrong with our body, our significant other, our lifestyle, our financial status, our politicians, our country, the world, fill in the blank, it's way too easy to overlook what is right. We pursue in that consciousness, we become jaded. We don't even notice our profound blessings. We pursue something we don't have, thinking it will fulfill us. And once we get it, we're not happy. We pursue the next thing. And you know what? Those outer things never, ever fulfill us. That's not what really feeds our soul. We are never going to feel blessed when we are addicted to the drama of what's wrong and what's missing. So Ralph Waldo Emerson said, "Never lose the opportunity of seeing something beautiful, for beauty is God's handwriting." I love that quote. And the rest of that, I'm paraphrasing the rest of the quote. He says, "Welcome beauty in every face, in every sky, in every flower, and see beauty as a cup of blessing." When we focus on our blessings, it creates a gravitational pull that attracts us to a self-perpetuating cycle of good. And because of the principle of abundance, it responds to a grateful heart. The practice of a lifetime is to make blessing your life a daily ritual. Jones says you can't obsess over what's wrong and expect to attract what's right. To gauge where we are in this process, he asks us to do some honest personal reflection. I'm only going to do one example with you today, but it's a good one. He says, and just answer this to yourself, can you rejoice in other people's successes? Or do you default to envy and jealousy, thereby separating yourself from the flow of abundance? He continues, we can celebrate everyone's successes because we know there is always more than enough to go around. And if we judge or criticize others, our minds personalize it. He says, if you are criticizing someone else, in the end, you are criticizing yourself. If you bless others, there's a place in you that feels and receives that blessing. And this really gives new meaning to one of the Bible verses that I think is probably the most misunderstood in all of Scripture, and that is, do not judge so that you will not be judged. Traditionally, that has meant that there's some, you know, God looking out for every mistake we make, some punitive God. But Jones says this means the same judgment you inflict on others, you inflict on yourself. That gives it a completely different meaning, doesn't it? So, you may have heard this couplet. It's attributed to lots of different people, so I'm not naming a person, but two men look out the same prison bars. One sees mud, and the other sees stars. Jones suggests if we find ourselves looking down instead of up in life, we need to stop, breathe, smile, and affirm, this is the day I take my mind back to basic training in camp consciousness, right? This is the day I regroup. This is the day I unpack that suitcase. On more than one occasion, the scriptures tell us that Jesus looked up before performing what we call miracles. The most striking example is when he raised Lazarus. Remember that? The text says, and so he looked up and said to God, thank you, I know that you have heard me. Well, traditionally, this has been taken to mean he looked up to heaven or he looked up to a God that was far away. But metaphysically, it simply means he looked up to a higher consciousness. He looked up to a greater reality than what his eyes showed him. And so Jones says that as we all grew up, most of us, few of us were told that the altitude of our attitude would affect our entire lives, which is why the victim mindset is so prevalent in our culture. And we just have to release that idea that we are victims. And building a belief system that supports the vision of life you desire begins, but does not end, with an attitude of gratitude. A grateful mind eventually attracts itself to great things. Now, we all know it's common practice to keep a gratitude journal where we record things we're grateful for. How many have done that? I've done it many times, and it's really powerful. However, Jones takes it a step further by asking what would be required for us to go beyond gratitude. And his answer is that we need to expand our perspective to become aware of how much we already take for granted. Things that probably never landed in our gratitude journals, such as a roof over our heads, coffee in the morning, our car to drive around in, and the money to buy gasoline in it. So I'm going to try one just quick practice from the book. There are many others there, and those of you who are doing the discussion group, I'm sure you'll enjoy discussing them. But this is an easy one for us to do together. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to take a deep breath and hold it as long as you can. Ready? Okay, before anybody faints and falls on the floor, I'd like you to notice how grateful you are for the next breath that follows. Take the next breath and feel it fill your lungs. And yes, that was the one that you would have taken for granted. We take for granted every single breath. And as I said, Jones has some other good exercises in the book. But the point is, when we take life for granted, it becomes the norm, and gratitude gets pushed aside, and the exquisite sweetness of having been given an unknown, limited amount of time on this earth goes unnoticed and unappreciated. Rabbi Harold Kushner writes, and this is a little small for you to see too, but I'll read it to you. Can you see the holiness in those things you take for granted? A paved road or a washing machine? If you concentrate on finding the good in every situation, you will discover that your life will suddenly be filled with gratitude, a feeling that nourishes the soul. So remember, when you bless anyone or anything, when you are actually recognizing the oneness with Spirit, with Source, with all of life, where the principle of abundance originates. So the two remaining questions for us today are, where can we begin even more living our passions? And where can we bless our lives today? And we're going to take that into meditation in a couple moments. But before we do so, we're going to affirm the great truth about our God that makes all of this possible. And for those of you who might be here for the first time, this is printed in your bulletin, being said in Unity churches all over the world. And you can say it with me together. There is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life. God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is.